Welcome to season two. I'm Alex Hirsch, creator.
Woo. Hi, I'm Rob Brunzetti. I'm the supervising producer and the one-time director of this episode.
And that absence you hear, that sad absence, that's Michael Rianda.
He just left us.
Not being in this episode. In fact, Michael Rianda was not on this season.
That's true. Well, he was as a consultant, but he was no longer with us in body, just in spirit.
So, like, I get a lot of flack. People are like, well, you end the show after only two seasons. Well, you don't have 10 seasons in you. And I'm like, hey, I stuck it out for two whole seasons. Mike only did one, Mike and he bailed. Split. Well, because me and Mike were of the same mind, where we were such, like, weird perfectionists who, like, had no life and slept in the office. And after, like, you know, a season of that, Mike's like, woof, I'm done.
Yeah.
And I also wanted to be done. I was so tired, and I didn't know if the show was working, and I almost didn't make a second season.
True.
Like, Mike left, and I almost left with him, and then I was like, I can't start this and not finish it. And the fan reaction was so huge.
Right. And we did want to finish it. And we had a story to tell. And we just decided to tell it all in season two.
Yes. And before we wrote before we put pen to paper on a single episode in this season, we knew this is going to be our last season.
Yes.
And we had a lot of conversations early on about how are we going to structure this.
Yep.
And what we basically, and one of the biggest questions was, how soon are we going to get to that portal?
We had to get to it because we had shown it.
We had
that
talked
was
about
something we really struggled over. We struggled a lot on this episode. This was the most stressful episode probably since the first episode.
This is the least fun I've ever had writing on the show because Mike was gone, my buddy and confidant and good cop, and we had when we did the first season, there was no expectations. You know, nobody knew what it was, nobody cared. And by this point, the show had been out, and even though the entire season hadn't aired, I think by the time we were watching this, like, it was becoming beloved, and people were so invested in it, and we really wanted to do right by them as much as we could.
And they were invested in the big continuity, even though we'd given them the barest of breadcrumbs to take them through.
Oh, and they'd also solved a lot of it. There was, by the time Carpet Diem aired, a big contingent of the internet had a theory that Stan's got a twin brother, possibly named Stanley or Stanford, that is somewhere else, and maybe he's in the portal. Like, people had kind of figured it out, and we knew there was going to be a year hiatus with people already knowing the answer. And so we were wondering, well, how soon do we just get to it? And we had even talked about maybe this first episode they just go into the portal.
Right.
Maybe they all fall in as a family. Like, and they were like, oh, maybe we wait really late in the season. And I kind of made the decision, let's make it half and half. Let's make the exact midpoint of the season, episode 10, where we get to that portal. Because if we wait longer than that, it feels insane because so many people already know it. And because we've made you hungry for it. But if it happens, you know, so it should happen that early. But we don't want it to happen too late because we want enough time to get to know Ford a little bit. And
have
a big finale.
Well, and also we kind of, the thing is, we turned on the portal at the end of season one. And it's like, well, why doesn't whatever's going to come out of the portal come out of it right then?
Well, and that was my biggest frustration. If those of you who might be listening in order, you know, it was our board artist who had suggested, let's see this big portal and let's turn it on. And there was a version where Stan shows the portal, but it's off.
Yeah.
And then the board artist was like, come on, it's got to be bigger. And they did a board where we saw it turn on and it was so cool.
Yeah.
We're like, ah, what the heck? And then when we were working on this episode, I was like, why did we turn it on? What was I thinking? How are we going to make the people are going to want it to just, something's got to come out right now. And so we pulled our hair out. We drove ourselves crazy thinking, okay, how about it's on, but it's not at maximum power.
And it's searching.
And it's searching, and he's got to find some fuel for it. But it was very much, we had written ourselves into a corner there.
We wrote ourselves into a lot of corners that we had to get out of.
Right our way out of. When I remember just like, you know, like Mike's got packing his bag. He's like, well, figure it out. and this was, I was under a lot of stress because I wanted it to be satisfying, and I knew that we had had a really satisfying ending to our first season, and I wanted to start off this season with a bang, and I wanted to rebond these characters and still be fun and funny, but also set up a lot of ideas.
This scene right here, right? This is where Dipper's basically giving himself a mission statement for season two, which is, it's time to get serious.
Yeah.
Our noses, and it's time we stop goofing around and get to the bottom of it.
Bro, you've looked at that thing like a bazillion times. There's nothing left to discover. Half the pages are blank, remember?
I just feel like I'm one puzzle piece away from figuring out everything.
Don't worry, Dipper. Lord Mystery Ham is on the case.
I play by my own rules, what?
I don't know why I tell you things. Do you hear that?
Hey, Mr. Pines, what's that code word I'm supposed to yell?
This was us trying to say, this is what the season is. And Dipper says, the summer is halfway over.
Right.
Like, this is our way of trying to kind of tell people, because, like, I knew, we all knew that this was the end of, this was the final season of Gravity Falls. There was no shyness about it. We planned it.
You didn't want to tread water. Well, and I mean, you felt like kind of like a lot of the stories you wanted to tell, you had told, and you didn't want to tell the same stories again. Or do the same kind of conceit again, or the same kind of magic again, and we wanted every episode to be valuable.
Well, and you know, we could have done 3 seasons, or 4 seasons, or 5 seasons, or 8 seasons, like. But the level of work and love we were putting into this.
Well, yes, and stress, and especially for you. I mean, you poured your blood and soul into this show.
Well, and also for some, you know, key members of the show like yourself, also like Ian Worrell, you know, work that he was doing on this show. I remember, like, after season 1, Mike was like, this is hard and exhausting. I need to regroup. Peace out. You do season 2. And, you know, I begged him, like, consult a little bit. I want to at least have somebody to bounce ideas off of.
Yeah.
I remember Ian was super wiped out, and he was like, oof, I got maybe one more season in me. So it's like, yeah, you know, these pillars of the show, they only had one more season in them as well. Yeah. You know, like Ian only had one more season in them. You know, Mike didn't even have a season. And I'm like, again, it's always like that. It's almost like that thing that you, me, and Mike have, where Mike is the guy who's got the extreme, you're the guy who's got the more magnanimous, and I'm kind of in the middle.
We can talk right now. Please, come in. I have so much to show you.
I'm sorry, agents. Kid has an overactive imagination and, like, a sweating problem.
Ha ha, zing!
Paranormal town stuff is just part of gift shop lore. Sells more tickets, you know.
Boop-a-doop-boop-boop. Swag.
We have other spots to investigate. We'll be on our way.
I'm confiscating this for evidence.
Smart move.
Wait! No, wait! We have so much to talk about!
Hold it, kiddo. Trust me, the last thing you want around during a party is cops. I'm confiscating that card. Now how's about you go be a normal kid?
The reason there is a Grunkle Stan and the reason there is a Gravity Falls, it all exists for one reason. And that's as a way to make Dipper and Mabel, but specifically Dipper, grow with this issue he has, which is Dipper wants to grow up too fast.
Yep.
That's his flaw as a character. And it builds to a choice where he has a chance to sort of skip over childhood, and then he comes to appreciate childhood.
Yeah.
And when he returns from this summer, he's not in such a rush. He's not in such a rush to date Wendy and to be a government agent and all this stuff. Like,
right.
He's gained appreciation of this value. And to me, like, this one summer is designed to do that. And
yeah, it wouldn't have made any sense for him to come back. What would the story be to do another? There was no other summer story to tell.
You could invent tons of monsters and jokes.
Of course.
But for an actual character arc for Dipper, this was built for that. So, like,
yeah,
to me, and the whole reason these government agents exist was, we actually had a slightly different plan. I had this thought at this point in the series that Dipper might want to be a government agent, and that Dipper might be given some choice at some point. Like, oh, does he?
I remember that.
Is there some, like, he applies to be a junior agent,
right,
and he gets the letter and he got in,
yep,
but that means that he's not going to be around Mabel anymore. And as we were starting to figure out the second half of the season, we're like, oh, it would be so much more powerful if it was Ford,
right,
who offered him this.
Yes.
If Ford is the example of the adult Dipper always wanted to be, that he has a choice between, like, trying to rush ahead to be that adult, but as we see in Ford's life and as we read in Journal 3, there's a character who just wanted to be the man at the expense of all other people, and it ruined his life.
Yeah.
Like, he's the cautionary example, yep, of a character like Dipper, who just was like, I want to race through and be the genius, and, you know, everyone else be darned. And that, so, like, we were thinking about all these things while we were building this episode.
So there was a lot of pressure on it.
Yeah, a lot of pressure. We're like, this is the first episode of the last season that needs to bridge these ideas, that needs to set up where our season is going.
And also bring all our characters back.
And
we're seeing all the characters here re-arrive, basically,
yeah,
to our audience.
This is something that we had, you know, learned in season 1, that a party is a great way to bring characters together. It's great in Double Dipper. It's great in Northwest Manor. And so we thought this is a way to kind of see everybody.
One good pie.
These kegs are full of meat.
Tambry sends me the craziest texts.
The whole town.
But it was so hard to write, and we did so many different versions of this story about what is the conflict? Is it with the agents? What does Dipper do? What's the
right
monster of the week? I kind of had a problem with it just being straight up zombies, because one of my things was I never want to do just a regular monster.
Yeah.
I always wanted to be a new monster.
Right.
And
another twist on something.
The only twist that I could sort of think of that felt at least Gravity Fallsy enough was that they defeat him using karaoke.
Yeah.
Even though it's an average monster, it's
yeah,
an unaverage way to destroy them. This room. Also, at this point in the season, we had a whole series worth of lore, so our backgrounds are actually a lot more detailed at this point. They are filled with references to previous episodes. Dipper and Mabel's room is full of all these new things. Yep. Stan's room, we just went past all sorts of little things that had little notes and nods to other episodes. I love that Ian put one of the street sharks in there.
Yeah, I like that too. It's amazing.
Stan's room is this the first time we've ever seen it. There's references to boxing in there. We know that he was boxing as a kid. There's in the closet, you see this like Evel Knievel Daredevil like biker helmet with stars and stripes. We had this thought that like Stan had a biker phase.
He probably did.
That was one of our episode ideas, was that one of his old biker buddies, Jimmy Snakes, comes to town.
Yeah, I remember that.
And this was us kind of setting.
That was something we never cracked, but it was okay.
It turned out that like our entire second season is going to be about Stan's rivalry with his brother.
And so why introduce
another rival?
Didn't make sense.
Yeah.
But it was a fun idea.
Well, and I think this conversation gives you guys a good idea of like what we did know and what we didn't. Like, we know Ford's coming. At this point, we know the portal's the middle of the season. We know the ending of this series is going to be about, Dipper giving a choice to grow up too fast. We know there's going to be a big apocalypse.
Yeah. Another thing that was difficult about this episode is making Dipper still likable with these choices that he makes in this episode, because he basically summons a bunch of zombies and, threatens everybody. I mean, Seuss gets turned into a zombie. These are not small things that happen.
Well, and Dipper, we think of Dipper as a pretty rational character. He's pretty smart. His bad choices come out of overeagerness and naivete, and we want to make sure that we're not mad at him. So in this moment, we really wanted to feel what he feels, which is no one is listening to him. And these guys are just goading him and telling him like, you got that over imagination, kid. And he's so close to somebody.
Yeah.
And so
he can taste the solution here.
It required stakes to be that high to believe that he could just shout a zombie curse. Because we knew we wanted those zombies in the third act, but they don't really have anything to do with Dipper's arc here, which is basically about, trying too hard to impress these guys.
Yeah.
That guy who said I can confirm not funny is a caricature of one of our writers,
yes,
Jeff Rowe.
Yes.
Jeff
very,
was the
a very great caricature of
that. Diablo Dominus Mondo Vici.
Jeff was the guy in the office who was obsessed with P90X and like he was reading a book about Area 51 and he challenged me to a crunches contest. We did 1,000 crunches.
Amazing.
Because he was like, you can do it, you can do it.
Did you
can
manage
do it.
To do 1,000?
I did. And
well
I,
done.
And I was in so much pain for 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the downside of that.
Mother of all that is holy. What do we do?
It's just one zombie. Trust me, I see stuff like this all the time. Good thing it was just that one.
Oh my gosh! You guys can help, right?
Kid, we've been chasing the paranormal for years, but we've never seen anything like this before.
Get down!
Jeff also kind of, not that he replaced Mike, but he kind of came to fill a similar role in that he was also the guy that was enthusiastically into plussing everything and staying late and, never satisfied necessarily with anything that was written. Yeah. Always believing that you could shoot higher.
Jeff Rowe was sort of Mike's apprentice in a way, like a buddy of Mike's who Mike had suggested for the show.
There's a confident energy that he has that he kind of shares in common with Mike. It's not the same energy, but it's in this kind of same ballpark.
Yeah.
But Mike is such a lovable goof.
And his writing was amazing, and I hired him on, and I got to know him, and of course he turned out to be a really brilliant, sweet guy, amazing writer, really, really funny, and a lot of episodes that he wrote that he kind of really sort of took the mantle on, episodes like Mabel Land or Golf War, have a lot of these like really crazy jokes that only could have come from Jeff.
He really added a level of absurdity that was very useful for us.
Sorry, 1 second. You gotta admit this is pretty cool.
Zombies!
Don't panic! Maybe they're just a really ugly flash mob.
Dudes, stay calm. I've been training for this moment my whole life. With all the horror movies I've seen, I know literally everything there is to know.
I got to give a shout out to Robert Ryan Corey. Season 2, once at this point, Gravity Falls had already been on television, and it now had fans, and it now had sort of a notoriety as being like a really high-quality show. And so it was a lot easier to find artists season 2 than it was season 1 because there was something to check out. So like we got, you know, these zombies are designed by Robert Ryan Corey. He's one of the best character designers in the world. He's also a lunatic. But like nobody can do scarier monsters or grosser gags than he does.
Yeah. This and the shapeshifter in Into the Bunker
are designed by him. And they're so much scarier
among other things,
than anything we saw season one. Like that, you know, he drew that special pose.
Yeah.
And you know, at this point, the crew is, we were able to put together a really, you know, season one crew was amazing. You know, but season two, we were able to just get a lot of folks who I think would have turned us down if they hadn't seen season one.
Yeah.
And so episodes like this, and this is a beautiful episode. I mean, that scene with the zombie eating the rainbow ball people were just bringing the heat on it. And we all really, really gave our A game on this one because we wanted the return to the show to feel special.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, like I was very stressed out with how it came out. I never felt like I quite cracked what I wanted. There was so many things I wanted to do. And I never felt like we quite got there.
The tone is a little different. It's a little darker.
It's a little darker. I was worried about that.
It's not as silly.
It's not as character-based. There's a lot of story pieces. Yeah.
It's a little bit more of an action show in this episode and in Into the Bunker.
Yeah.
I mean, there's other season two episodes that are more of the flavor of first season. I mean, Gulf War and the stuff that follows after these first two. But these first two are a little bit darker. They're a little bit different.
Well, and like I'll say, like, you know, I again, and this is another one that I rewatched recently because, you know, sometimes when you watch an episode, all you remember is the struggles and how hard it was.
Right.
And it's hard to untangle that. So even if it's working, you see it and you're like, oh gosh, I remember how I could never quite crack this idea. But I recently rewatched this and I think it's a pretty impressive piece of television. And in particular, you know, the first two acts might be a little slow, but this third act, this is a rocking third act.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like Grunkle Stan showing up and punching all these guys. It's a great hero moment. The art direction, the way this is lit. Paul, one of our BG painters, Ian, did such a good job. The storyboard.
The detail of the vending machine light flickering. You know that he just came up from the portal room.
Yeah, at the last second, something we just added. And this just looks
all this action
beautiful.
Stuff. The storyboard artists really brought their A game here. And
I think the animation studio wanted to quit after this episode.
Yeah. Oh, thank God. They were not happy
So many zombies. If I had realized just how hard this was going to be, I would have demanded we simplify the designs. But it wasn't until the animation came back. We were like, we have a few notes. And the studio was like, this is the hardest thing ever done by anyone. Do you realize that you're asking us to do notes on something that nearly killed us? We're like, oh, sorry.
Okay. Half as many notes then. Yeah. But also, like, another a big character piece here is basically by his actions, you know, Stan reveals to the kids that he is aware of gravity, as we see in the scene, that he's aware that Gravity Falls is not a normal town. You know, the audience knows that it's all an act, but the kids haven't known up until now.
Well, and we felt that one of the sort of status quo adjustments that we wanted to make in season two was we discovered that when you bring Stan along on the adventure, it's so much fun. Like,
yeah,
I think in particular, it was Land Before Swine.
Yep,
and we were like,
yep.
The one episode we were like, let's say that it's a dinosaur. And so Stan can excuse it. And what it gave us was this really fun sequence. And we were like, we want a little more of that as possible. We want to see that Stan who punched the pterodactyl. We want to see him again. So let's do this episode and let's just have him say like, yeah, all right, the magic's real, but I don't want it to get you hurt. And I thought maybe I could talk you out of it.
Right.
Another status quo changer was that in the previous season, it ends with Dipper giving up his journal. And there was a lot of argument about like, oh, is it lame if he just gets his journal back?
It's another thing we struggled with.
And we knew that Stan knows the importance of this journal. He wouldn't give the journal back to Dipper. It was a bit of a convolution. We'd written ourselves a corner. We wrote ourselves out. We said, okay, he's photocopied it. He's giving it to Dipper because he knows that Dipper is really precocious and he'll never stop asking.
Yes.
And then this idea of invisible ink, I think, was it didn't really have story significance for the series so much as it had significance with, we just want to get deeper into the mystery.
Yeah.
And we want a new layer. And honestly, we wanted something that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Like, part of this was just, I think this is exciting.
Yeah. When I watched this with my wife, I remember when the blacklight, we saw the blacklight pages and she's like, ah, like she remembered it, but she was just like remembering it again and being like, oh yes, this is exciting to see this
and
again.
It doesn't pay off a huge amount in terms of story, but I think
it's just fun.
It signals to the audience that we're going to focus a little more on mystery this season.
The mysteries are deeper than you think they are. Like there's another layer we hadn't revealed to you. Here it is.
This sequence
is amazing. Did you write this song?
This was a very hard. So, you know, we would use just like actual karaoke songs in this for the animatic originally.
Yes.
You know, like Don't Stop Believing, karaoke standards. But we needed a new one. And it was, I remember Brad did a few, our composer. And he came up with this tune, and it was good. Lyrics didn't feel quite right, and I asked Matt Chapman, musical genius.
Might be Matt.
And all these lines, don't worry, Daddy, I've got my favorite dress on. Stan, yeah. I don't want to read this. I got to give Matt Chapman credit for that.
Matt is, of course, a genius.
An amazing writer, an amazing, brilliant talent.
Yeah, this is really
Renaissance
in his wheelhouse.
this is Brad's music, Matt's lyrics, Corey's designs, Alonzo's storyboards, and me and Rob's story and Rob's direction. A lot of people coming together to make something that looks as cool and insane as this. Yeah, sing it, Jason Ritter. it was so great getting Jason and Kristen to sing. Kristen actually had recently gotten some surgery on her mouth, and this was the first episode she did coming back.
I forgot about that.
And she's like, all right, I hope I don't have a lot of dialogue in this episode.
Good
like,
Lord.
Oh, you're just screaming a karaoke song.
Poor
but
woman.
She did an amazing, I mean, talk about
you
a trooper.
Can't hear it.
Yeah, she's
can't hear it
an amazing, did an amazing job.
She sounds great.
Dipper, are you kidding me? I got to sing.
But yeah, I mean, coming back and witnessing that, like, this episode to me was trying to set up all the things we wanted to set up. And it was such a relief when it came out. And I remember it wasn't, you know, considered to be like the ultimate standout of the entire series, but it got the fans back. People have been waiting for a year, and everyone was like, we're excited.
We hooked them, and that was what we really needed to do. Remember we were talking about the Into the Bunker being the first episode for a long time? We debated back and forth between which one should be first.
Yeah.
Because this one had given us so much trouble.
Part of me wanted to just throw the episode out, but we needed to set things up. And I'm very happy with the Seuss being a zombie bit.
Yes, I'm glad that we made him a zombie, and I'm glad we brought him back in such a simple way.
There was
we didn't belabor it.
There was some resistance, I think, from some of the more logical factions about, like, well, you can't just un-zombie someone. I'm like, yeah, why not?
Yeah, why not?
Dipper's got the journal. Let's say that
and
there's
also,
a way to do it.
It was great. It just made it real when he got bit.
Yeah. Yeah, well, exactly. Like, we wanted to have that stakes moment where you're like, Seuss got bit by a zombie? Anything could happen this season.
Yeah.
I got to give Nick Offerman credit for
he's
the voice
amazing.
Of Agent Powers.
Amazing.
He gives a credibility to this character.
He's a manly man of the old variety. He's got to be younger than me. He made me believe I was in the room with my father. he's an amazing man and a very, very generous man and a great actor.
He always nails the read.